And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that couple shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Eno Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Jay's back. Jay's back off his vacation. You made it out of Florida alive. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a 26-year-old Jay was having a great time. And then about Thursday of that week, 56-year-old Jay showed up and the vacation kind of grinded to a halt. But it was great because Friday we went to a Reds Marlins game. I volunteered to do the driving for that game. So it was the perfect time to dry out and glad to be back. It was fun getting back in the locker room yesterday and meeting some of the rookies, a lot of interesting personalities on that team. And, hearing from some guys yesterday that we haven't heard from in a long time.
You showed up at just the right time, Jay.
It was perfectly waiting for me.
It was perfectly timed. You missed a country club rookie mini camp, which occurred on Friday, which was, you know, we poke fun and joke about country club offseason around here. But it was the most country club thing I think we've seen in Zach Taylor's tenure. I mean, the rookie mini camp. I wasn't even comfortable using the word mini camp. I didn't want to use the word practice. I was stunned at the end. There actually was a football. Like, I mean, it was just some dudes in shorts and t-shirts learning how to stretch.
Yeah.
And at the end, there was like a few routes run. And
who threw the passes?
They had a tryout.
Okay.
From Oregon, Jake from Oregon, not from State Farm. was there to throw the ball around. And that was it. I mean, the rest of the league, like you see our colleagues, Joe Person in Carolina and like all these other, I'm reading all these tweets from people, huge play, Ben Standing in with Washington. Oh, Manuel Forbes just had an interception and all this stuff's going on. And I'm like, man, they just stretched and went home. Like that's what rookie camp was. But I do think there's a little bit of a bigger picture of they just want these guys to feel comfortable. They're never trying to push anybody hard in the off season. Everything is just learn your surroundings. See you on Monday when everybody else shows up. We want you to feel comfortable when everybody else shows up. And we mostly want you to know, don't go out hurting yourself trying to prove anything on day one. This is just about getting in and understanding where you are and the freshman orientation, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the big thing. Part of it is you don't want to overwhelm the guys and say you have to learn the whole entire playbook or this much of it right away. But the other thing you mentioned, it not getting anyone hurt, because the spring camp probably looked a lot different in college. And these guys are coming and they're stepping to the next level. There's probably a little bit of wanting to prove it. And you do. You don't want anybody going too hard, too fast. So it's kind of been Zach's MO since he got here. It makes sense that they would kind of have, I think that was probably the most country club of the rookie camps, but having not seen it, listening to your description, but it just kind of follows the way they've been doing things.
Yeah. They were the only team that did it is only one day in the league. So let's get past that. And folks, today's show is going to be about what happened on Tuesday, which was notable. And that was one, Joe Burrow spoke for the first time since we left Kansas City in the AFC Championship game. And he has been a hot topic, and that is because he's up. And that is, it's contract time for him. I don't know if you heard about this, if you knew that's coming down the pike. But so he talked a little bit about that yesterday, and I thought there were some notable takeaways there we want to get into. But it wasn't just Joe Burrow speaking. We knew that was happening. It was. We were told a couple days ahead of time, expect Burrow. We weren't told to expect T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase to be speaking, specifically Higgins, who I think has been a surprise that maybe even a little bit that he was even here, much less speaking to the media with a smile. Jay, you had a good interaction with him along the lines. I want to get into that in a minute. So we're going to kind of focus on Chase, Higgins, Burrow, contract talk. I know some people don't care about this stuff, but it's going to be very foundational to the next generation, so to speak, of Bengals football and what they can and can't do and what they look like. And I thought some interesting things were said yesterday, and so we want to dive into that. With that, I thought this was a perfect time to bring in Eric Eager, who, if you don't know Eric, you should. He is a VP of Research and Development at Sumer Sports. He was at PFF forever, working directly with NFL GMs. He's one of the smartest football people you will ever talk to. Has a podcast, the Sumer Sports podcast, with Thomas Dimitroff, who was the GM of the Falcons from 2008 to 2020. I highly recommend it. It's as intelligent a football conversation as you can have, particularly when it comes to roster building, creating value, the analytics within all of that, modeling, all of that stuff is their wheelhouse. And so I thought this was a perfect time to bring Eric on to talk a little bit about the Bengals, Burrow, the receivers, everything else that has to do with that. Really excited about that. Great conversation with him. Eric will join us. And it's Eager and Egger today. So we have Eric Eager, and then, of course, Mo Egger will be joining us. It's a Mo day here. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about headbands. We're going to talk about the disrespect shown to Michelle Williams and Destiny Child. We'll do some other stuff, too. We got thoughts on all of that. Plus, Run Past Your Boots, Arby's. Celebration of 513 Day. There's just a lot to get to, Jay. We got to dive right in. Let's talk about this. Joe Burrow speaks. And when Joe Burrow speaks, the world listens. Certainly everyone in Cincinnati listens. And we didn't think we were going to get much out of Burrow on the contract topic, but we knew that was going to be the topic. And, well, thankfully it got to be the topic after we got all the headband questions out of the way and talking about his muscles and stuff that apparently was national news. Like, you know, it's either a slow news day or this dude has the world in the palm of his hands, in that a slow motion video of him throwing a football wearing a headband and no sleeves was like NFL programs across the nation all featuring it. Incredible stuff. The leading off the local news, like not the sports, like leading off the local news. Joe Burrow is got a sleeveless shirt and a headband and longer hair. Wow. Wow.
If I owned a headband, I would have worn it for this episode, but
you could probably pull one off. You definitely wore a headband back in the day.
No, I did not. I didn't wear hats. I didn't want anything messing with that flow. The big, nice mullet is like, I was very particular about my hair and I did not want anything. I would put sunglasses on top of my head, but I would only wear hats if it was one of those hungover days, and I never wore headbands.
Sunglasses on top of the head is as much a part of the mullet as the plumage.
It is. It is.
They go hand in hand. But Burrow talking about the contract, it pointed out, look, the thing that I like about this is I don't want this to play out through the media. The Bengals don't want it to play out through the media. That's what works for us. And that's kind of been the message that we've gotten internally for a while now. That said, there still were things said about his contract. And so here's a few of the small nuggets that we want to shine some light on from Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow.
Obviously, there's a lot of chatter about kind of your contract situation as you're up for extension. How involved are you in kind of those talks or in giving input? Is there a timeline in which you'd like to see that potentially done by?
Yeah, I'm involved. That's, it's in the works. That's not really something that I like to play out in the media. That's something just the way I think they want to do business. I want to do business. We prefer to keep that between us.
On that note, is there something that matters to you most with that? Like, cause there's a million different ways that these things can be sliced. Is there something that is the main thing that you want that matters to you with this deal?
I think there's a lot of different ways it could work out. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
How cognizant are you? There's obviously a lot of you guys in your draft class. Jamar's going to get next year. as you're going through these and kind of giving input, how cognizant are you of being able to kind of keep the core together and being able to allocate that? How much is that maybe top of mind, if any, as you go through this?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, whenever you have guys on the team that need to be paid, that's always on your mind. You want that to be a focal point, and so we're working to make that happen.
Being tight with Josh, have you talked to him at all, knowing that he went through the contract stuff and all that as he kind of went through that offseason? How much do you pick his brain about kind of how that was like and what he was like during the process?
No, I haven't really talked to him about it. I'm pretty clear on what I want and in the contract and what I think is best for myself and the team. And so, you know, we're on the road to making that happen.
Is having kind of the way that T and Jamar came up big and that AFC title game when you needed them, is that an example of kind of why you kind of keep maybe those guys top of mind as you go through all this?
Yeah, you got to have good players. You know, you can't, you see, I mean, it doesn't matter how good your quarterback is. If you don't have good players around him, you're not going to be a very good team.
So there's Joe Burrow. And here's what stood out to me, and I have a column up on this now, is the message is that, look, y'all, I got this. Okay. I'm involved. I got a plan. The people around me are a focal point. They're a part of my plan that matters to me. And he has been obsessive about winning and has an innate feel for locker rooms and relationships since day one. That's not going to change in his biggest moment. And I think that was sort of what he reaffirmed to everybody. And I think that creates a sense of art. It's all good, right? Mm. Like, Burrow's got this. The Bengals have got this. We know they're going to pay him. It's just a matter of them working. This is not going to turn into some contentious money grab like we've seen happen in Baltimore. Something that turns into a distraction for years, or in a lesser way, Dak Prescott. I'm not saying he had a money grab, but it went on. You know what I mean? And it was just a thing. Now, that things can change. It's business, it's negotiations, it's money. Things get personal, they change. But I thought Burrow saying those few things was a pretty calming force and should tell everybody about kind of the tenor of where these things are at right now. It's in a good place.
Yeah, what I was most struck with was, like you said, when he said that he is involved, because so many times you hear guys that are going through this, obviously they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to get into the details and all that. So their fallback is, I just let my agent handle that. And he came right out and was honest, says, no, I am involved. And I think that was telling. And then the other part about it was Super Bowl week, and we heard T suggest that Joe would want to take less or structure it in a way to help keep people around him. And I think Jamar has referenced that in the past, but this is the first time, it's just been speculation at this point. That's the first time we've actually heard Joe say, yes, I want to be mindful of the guys around me and keep this core in place. And, you know, he's not going to BS up there with something like that. It's hard to go back on if it goes the other way. So I don't know if you're talking, it's not necessarily a hometown discount, but it is the way you structure it, that is not going to leave scraps for everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, there's advantageous ways for you to still get your money. We'll talk with Eric a little bit about the mechanisms and the levers in the Patrick Mahomes contract beyond the length that made it so helpful for Kansas City to decide when they are capable of taking the big bites out of the deal and putting it in the team's hands from year to year so that they can always have a competitive team. We know that's a big part of it too. The line is obvious to me, though. I'm pretty clear on what I want in the contract, what I think is best for myself and the team. CEO Burrow speaking. I told them what I want and what I think is best for the team. Yeah, himself and the team. Okay. And they're on the road to making that happen. And I think that probably aligns. I mean, it's for the most part has aligned before this was about money. They have involved Burrow in roster decisions. They have cared about his opinion. I mean, I don't know if you would call him an assistant GM, because there's not even the GM. We have enough title issues here in this organization. But he's certainly as front office as you can be from a quarter. They care about involving him and him feeling involved in the franchise. And that goes along with this. And it kind of brings that together. And we'll see how it all plays out. You know, it's don't tell me what you value. Show me your budget. Okay. That's, we'll see what the numbers say. We'll see what the contract looks like when it's done. But when you have somebody saying the guys on the team need to be paid, that's on my mind, it's a focal point, and I know what's best for myself and the team and what I want in the contract, I think it's a pretty clear message that keeping those that matter around and clearing that space is part of his view of these things. And that was suggested by Duke Tobin to us at the Combine when we did the post-Combine podcast. I remember specifically saying this was the line. Joe Burrow sees the big picture off the field too. He gets it. It's about winning. It's about relationships. And that's not changing.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because one of the more interesting quotes Joe had was one of his shorter ones. And when it's a really short answer, you know it's a good question because he doesn't want to get into it. And it was your question about is there one thing that's more important to you than another, whether it's total value or average annual value or years, whatever it may be. And he said, oh, it could go a lot of different ways. And he just kind of left it at that. Do you buy that? Do you buy that there's a lot of variables still at play? Or do you think this is kind of just a waiting game, that let Justin Herbert sign first and then trump him by $1 million a year, what to be the highest paid?
That's it to me. I mean, well, I think that Burrow, it's set for Burrow to be last in the water here.
Yeah.
Okay. And his contract is going to go above Justin Herbert. Okay. So there's no sense that why would he come in now and let Herbert go over top of him? Like, that's not what it should be. So let everybody else go. Burrow should be the highest. And if any things pop up that are weird, or let all the template, then he's the last one. All the templates are out there. The whole landscape is set, and you can play off of that and know that you're getting the best deal in the way that you want it. And I think to me that makes the most sense, that it probably is partially waiting on Justin Herbert for sure. And I think the answer to my question about what matters most to him is just, he knows what matters most. He just doesn't want it to play out in the media. He doesn't want to say, I'm a years guy, right? Yeah. Or, you know, I just want cash in my pocket tomorrow so I can go build 8 houses. You know, like, it's not, or it's about making sure T gets his. He doesn't want it to be that way, and that he's talking about it, but you know, you never know. Maybe he would. I don't know. Maybe he wants to answer that question. You never know where it's going to come from. But I think, you know, it's a good thing. I think what you heard and what you have heard this entire offseason, again, things can change. You just never know, but it does seem that they're in a really good place. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Jay. Of course, you have stats. Let's talk about cap hits and quarterbacks. Now, cap hits are one of those numbers that, you know, so I talked to Andrew Brandt, and he has discussed this topic ad nauseum, that he thinks it's total BS cop-out for anybody to say that you can't build a quality team because you're paying an elite quarterback, and that needs to stop. I'll have more on that later this week. But his point is cap hits are my problem as a general manager or as someone who does that work. Okay, don't worry about that. I can take care of that. But the bottom line is what they look like does matter, and that's been proven. Jay, you've got cap hit stats.
I do. So I went back and I looked at the top five quarterback cap hits by year, and how did those teams fare? So before we get to the overall, how far back do you think you have to go to find a quarterback who had the highest cap hit that year who led his team to the playoffs?
Well, maybe I'm going to connect it to who we're having on next, and I'm going to say Matt Ryan in 2017?
Matt Ryan was the third highest in 2017, and he did lead his team to the playoffs, but he was third. Flacco was number one that year, didn't make it. Carson Palmer with the Cardinals was number two that year, did not make the playoffs. You have to go back the year before that. Eli Manning in 2016 at $24.2 million. Was the highest paid quarterback that year. Actually, four of the top five led their team to the playoffs. Eli, Ben, Matt Ryan, Matthew Stafford. Only Joe Flacco failed. But you go back through the years. Last year, this would probably win you a bar bet. Who was the highest? Who had the highest AAV last year among quarterbacks?
It wasn't Rodgers.
No, it was Ryan Tannehill.
Average annual value last year?
Yes. And obviously did not make the playoffs. Mahomes was two, and Aaron Rodgers was five. In 2021, Russell Wilson was number one, did not make the playoffs. 2020, Dak Prescott was number one, did not make the playoffs. 2019, Matthew Stafford with the Lions, didn't make it. 2018, Jimmy Garoppolo, 49ers, didn't make it. And as I said, Flacco in 17 with the Ravens. Just overall, you look at the top five, go back the last 10 years, the top five, how many of them actually got to the Super Bowl? You're talking about
this is top five by cap hit.
By cap hit. Okay. And it's not just 50, because there's a couple of years where the number five guy was tied with the number six guy. So it's actually, you're talking about 52 quarterbacks. Of those, how many reached the Super Bowl?
I reached the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Two?
Four.
Four?
Mahomes last year won it. Brady in 2020 was tied with Philip Rivers for the number five paid quarterback, and he won it. And then you have to go all the way back to, like as you said, Matt Ryan in 2016 was number three. He lost. Peyton Manning in 2013 was the third highest paid, and he lost the Super Bowl. So not a lot of history there for making your guy the highest paid. Now, obviously, if Burrow has the highest annual, these weren't annual values, I'm sorry, these were the cap hits for that specific year.
Yeah.
But so if even if Burrow is the highest paid average cap guy, once he signs, he's not going to have the highest cap hit next year. He's not going to have the highest cap hit the year after that. It's going to come down the road. But still, it plays into the whole storyline of it is tough to build a championship team when you've got that much money thrown into one guy.
No question. And cap hits are so much about allocation and accounting and making the numbers work. You know, the cash aspect of this is huge. And I just think a lot of this becomes a lot of numbers and jargon, and it becomes hard to follow and understand. And so I really, you know, the thing to try to pin down is like what numbers really matter. And I think, you know, you want flexibility. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of the Mahomes contract beyond the length is the ability from year to year to know that every year it's not a total anchor on what you're doing, that you have flexibility in the deal, you have flexibility to make things work for you. And from a team-friendly deal, that usually comes with longer years. And a lot of times the player deals are higher guarantees and shorter years. And so that's a big thing to keep an eye on as this all comes out. I'll dive much more into that later this week for you to look at. Let's talk about Higgins, though, here, because I want to bring in a little bit of T. Higgins, because I just thought it was surprising. I was surprised that he spoke or even was there.
He might have been too.
Jay, give me the background on, you know, you walked in. So everyone, this is the advantage that we have as a two-man team here. If something's going on, like Burrow having his first press conference, everyone's in there, okay? Mm. Now, the locker room is open when Burrow's doing his press conference. And normally that would be filled with all the media, but there was no one. And so Jay went in and worked the open locker room while I was in with Burrow, much to the surprise of T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought they may have ducked into the cafeteria because they were really late. I don't know if they stayed after and caught passes or what, but they were two of the last guys to show up, and Burrow had already started. And they walked in together. I was like, hey, do you have a quick second to Ja'Marr? He's like, oh, no, I'm not doing media today. He's like, nobody told me I had to. And I was like, well, you don't have to, but it's your decision if you want to talk. I just thought maybe we could talk. Everybody else is in with Burrow right now, so if you want to just talk to one guy as opposed to a whole scrum of guys, we could do it right now. And he's like, okay, let's go real quick. Well, before he said let's go real quick, he looked at T, because I told him, yes, there is media today. It used to be Mondays. Now it's Tuesdays. And he looked over at T, and they both had these wide eyes, and T's like, we better get our showers quick and get out of here. and T did. T immediately went and got in the shower, and I thought, well, there's no way he's talking. But Ja'Marr talked to me for a while, and then I could tell he started getting a little shorter with his answers, and he wanted to go. So I was like, okay, well, thanks for your time. I'll let you go. And then I went on and was talking to some of the rookies that I hadn't met yet. And you guys all came out of the Burrow and posted up around their lockers, and they were not fast with their showers. So they came out, and rather than saying no thanks, they both of them stood there side by side and held dueling press conferences. And they did at the same time, kind of made it easier on everybody that it wasn't one massive scrum around one guy, but they did. They both talked for a long time.
Yeah. Here's a little bit of something that T. Higgins had to say, though, about even being there and a lot of the talk surrounding his contract, and hey, heard a rumor that it was done and all this other stuff. So here's a little bit of T. Higgins.
See, I know a lot of people in your position wouldn't come to the offseason program. This happens a lot in the league. Why did you want to be here?
I mean, I love the game, man. You know, I wanted to come in and work. I mean, and I live here in Cincinnati. Why not be here and work out, you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
for free? So, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just here to get my work in.
For you, is there a message in that, too, of like, hey, I'm here? Like,
not necessarily. I mean, people can put it that way. At the end of the day, I'm here for me. And, you know, I'm going to get my body in the best shape to play at the highest level come game time. So,
was there, I mean, some people in their camp say, don't do that. Was there anybody that recommended you, hey, don't go, or you were just like, no, nah, everybody knows I'm coming? Like,
nah, my agent was even like, man, do what you want to do. At the end of the day, you know, it's whatever you want to do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. So, and that was my decision to come back and come work out.
The weird trade stuff before the combine that was out there, I'm sure you saw it.
I seen it, but I wasn't tripping. I know I'm wanted here at the end of the day, and I knew I wasn't going nowhere.
I don't think I've seen Duke shoot down a trade.
That was pretty cool to see. That made me feel, you know, more wanted here, and it felt good. So,
at one point it went viral that your deal was done. Did you get bombarded by people saying, all right?
Yeah, I had a lot of people texting me, man, but I ain't texting much. Because I knew it wasn't up to them. You know what I'm saying? So my mom texted me, was like, you got a deal done, son? And like, mom, trust me, if I had a deal done, you would be first to know. She was like, I thought so. But yeah, man, it was just, you know, just rumors.
You get used to so many people discussing your business?
You know, it's all new to me, so.
Yeah.
I've always been a quiet guy, so all the stuff that was like in one and out the other.
So there's T. Higgins, and yeah, Mama would have known first if it was done. So if you ever want to know when the actual T. Higgins contract gets done, maybe just make sure you're checking T. Higgins' mom's Twitter account, which is always very entertaining anyway. You should be following anyway. But, you know, the thing was, so I've gone down this list before, and I'm going to do it again just for the sake of this conversation. The five players, the five receivers that were in T. Higgins' spot last year, of being up for an extension and the off-season discussions getting personal, volatile, what have you. A.J. Brown, who requested a trade, okay, and did not report. There was a communication breakdown. He ended up getting dealt from the Titans to the Eagles. D.K. Metcalf did not show up for any off-season work, and he was a hold-in in camp. Deebo Samuel requested a trade and was a hold-in when camp began. Terry McLaurin did not show up for the offseason program, eventually got an extension before the year began. Marquise Brown requested a trade from Baltimore, was traded on draft day. That's the five. That's how they all went last year, in the exact same type of situation as T. Higgins. Yet here's T, present, talking to us, smiling and joking about it. And I just think that's such, it's so different from the norm that you've seen across the league. And you can use Jesse Bates as an example from last year of didn't sign his franchise tag, didn't participate in the offseason program, didn't even show up in camp until midway through. All of that, it's just so different than what we witnessed Tuesday. It's not contentious. It's something that's just kind of being handled, and he's there to be a team player and get his work in. And you just don't see that a lot in this league.
No, and you don't. And you know, you wonder, is it has Joe talked to him about this and what he wants to get done? And are there talks with the Bengals where he has this confidence that it is going to get done, so why not be here? Or maybe it's the other way, where he thinks it doesn't matter if it doesn't get done, he's still going to be risking that big payday by getting hurt during the season. So if he's going to play, you might as well practice. You might as well be here at this time. And it is, there's just this, it's part of that whole culture that Zach has built, where these guys, they want to be there. They got guys. I mean, T said it. I love football. I live here. Why wouldn't I be here? I can work out for free. And that is another part of this, where if these guys were to not show up, they still have to work out. They still have to get themselves in shape. And if they were to get hurt working out outside of the facility, then you really put yourself, the team doesn't have to pay you. So that all could play into it as well. But I do think it's telling that, you know, you have Burrow, Logan Wilson, and T. Higgins all up for extensions this year. None of them done yet. And they've all been here since day one. And, you know, you even throw Jamar in there. He's not up for an extension till next year. He set out phase one to focus on he said more football specific work as opposed to just the calisthenics and the weightlifting that they do at the Bengals facility. It just goes to that culture. These guys want to be around each other. They want to get work. They want to get better, and they want to put the work in.
Yeah. I'm convinced that T. Higgins is only here because he doesn't want to pay the $10 a month to Planet Fitness.
Yeah. That's what he said. I can work out here for free.
It's free. I don't need to tell T what he's about to be making. He could probably find a personal trainer with a nice place. But no, I'm with you. And I think it's notable. I think that things T said, you know, it's not necessarily about, obviously they all talk about it. Obviously with Joe's considering them, it's a part of it. And you can absolutely see the parameters of a T contract being built into the Burrow contract. And that being why everybody seems so happy. Mm-hmm. Again, Burrow sets the tone. His contract sends the message, and everybody being so comfortable with where things stand. And that's the only way you can take this, is that everyone feels pretty comfortable with where things are at, because otherwise, why would anybody even be here? Because when people are uncomfortable with where things are at in their negotiation, they ain't here. They're somewhere else. They're at home, or they're at Planet Fitness paying their $10 a month, unlike T, who's working out for free now. Real quick, before I to bring Mo in here to talk about headbands, I do want to bring in a little bit of Jamar Chase. And Jamar Chase, speaking about sort of his view on this whole contract situation and something that Jay was part of there. So here's a little bit of Jamar Chase.
How much have you stayed in contact with Joe this offseason?
Me and him talked a bit. I was saying on the offseason, me and him talked a bit. Wasn't too bad, though, so.
Do you pick his brain at all? Because, you know, he's going through this whole extension thing right now, and you're going to be doing it next year and try to get an idea.
About this?
Yeah, just.
Not really.
No.
I try not to get in. I'm not a person that's getting the people money. Yeah. Like, you get in here, as soon as I got in here, everybody like, oh, he got money. You know how they do the first rounders. I don't really be caring about all that. I just like playing football at the end of the day. You know, yeah. And the money don't make itself when you play good. So, yeah. No, I'm not really worried about it.
Joe talked about maybe leaving some money on the table on this deal. If you can help kind of bring you all next year. What's that like when you're a quarterback? Kind of talk about that.
I haven't heard him talk about that. He was the first source, I guess. But it means he wants to win. You know what he has to do to win, and he wants to win. He's a winning guy. He's not a quarterback that's always interested in money and all that other stuff. He just wants to win, and that's the good thing about Joe.
The contract stuff with, like, Joe and T, just knowing that's down the line for you.
I mean, yeah, I know it's coming. You know what I'm saying? Only so much can happen. We still waiting on T's and Joe's right now. I know I want T to stay here as long as possible. And I want the same thing with Joe. You know, I want those guys on my side for as long as I can. Great teammates, great people to have around. Sometimes we might lose people. You know what I'm saying? Not saying we are, but you know it will come to that one day. You know what I'm saying? So when that day comes, we just got to be prepared for it.
Jay, I enjoy Jamar Chase. Look, man, you're going to get paid. If you're good, you get paid.
Right.
Yeah. Well, tell people that are good and don't get paid. Okay? Because they get mad. It's how that goes down. But again, I just think the tone that was set yesterday is a pretty good sense of where things are at with everybody. And you just don't see that a lot. Of everybody being this comfortable with this much money and personal feelings all around as they try to divvy up the pie here. All right, let's just take a quick break.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I want to do this. We're gonna go back to back here. We're gonna splice in the conversation that I had with Eric Eager, and hear from Eric all about roster construction and how all of that works here. So here is my conversation with Eric Eager, and after that, we'll bring in Mo Egger, Eager and Egger Day here on HDPG. All right, next I hear that podcast growl. We're gonna bring in a local friend. Right? New to the show, and I'm sad about that we haven't had Eric on before, but Eric Eager, who is a Cincinnati resident for a little bit longer, worked at PFF, now at Sumer Sports, does the Sumer Sports podcast with Thomas Dimitrov, really champion for analytics and smart football conversation, and it's so great to have you on the show, Eric. What's going on, man?
Hey, man. Yeah, it's fun to be on the show. And I really enjoyed my time in Cincinnati, even though, you know, as a Kansas City Chiefs fan, like, it's kind of a budding rivalry. It's been a lot of fun to see the Bengals grow up and, you know, and become a team where it's like you know, 5 years ago, if I wanted to go to a Bengals game, I just decided the day of, and now I have to actually like plan it out because they're such a good franchise now, or at least that the results have been good. So it's been fun to live here.
Yeah. You know, I there's a couple places I wanna kind of go into with you. And first of all, I want to make sure people know about the Sumer Sports podcast you do with Thomas Dimitroff, who was, you know, former GM of the Falcons from 08 to 2020, longtime scout before that. He's the GM of that organization. What is Sumer, so people know what it is, and how, what's the pacing of the podcast? Where can they find the podcast?
Yeah, so Thomas and I were friends before I joined Sumer. When he was the general manager of the Falcons, I had a pretty, you know, we have, you know, when we were at PFF, like all 32 teams were our clients, but we certainly had some like kind of, you know, innovative question asking, I would say. And so we did a lot of work for them. And then when Thomas got let go in the middle of the pandemic season, I asked John, I was like, hey, can I, you know, I'd love to be able to build a suite for GMs at PFF and see if we can't serve that community better. So Thomas and I got to know each other kind of at the, you know, most of the 2021 season, and, you know, trying to, you know, build out products that a GM would like. And eventually Paul Tudor Jones, who's a famous macro trader, you know, lured Thomas into helping him start Sumer Sports, which is an analytics company that is, you know, basically, you know, trying to use all the data that, you know, places like PFF and Next Gen Stats and telemetry and everything, and do roster optimization. So basically trying to take all the great analytical work that's been done over the last, you know, half a dozen years or so, and try to help the GM optimize it all at once. And Thomas is the CEO, and eventually, you know, it was a little bit too good of an offer to pass up. So then I ended up joining Thomas there. And, you know, he always kind of wanted to have podcasts, and, you know, I had the PFF Forecast, which is still going. And so we transitioned to having a twice a week Sumer Sports show. Thomas during the summer does one of the shows, usually Monday, but we do Monday and Wednesday, and we kind of talk about everything. Thomas's experience, Thomas's, basically learning analytics. And then for me, kind of like my experiences in helping teams try to win over the better part of the last, you know, half a dozen years with PFF and now Sumer.
And it's a great combination, you know, between him and the league and your knowledge of everything. It's just a fantastic listen. I highly recommend it to anybody that cares at all about understanding the sport and how teams win. You mentioned roster optimization, and I want to start there with the Bengals, because they're in a particularly fascinating crossroads in that, okay, you built it, now you got to pay for it. And how do you continue to win when you have the quarterback contract coming up and T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase and Logan Wilson and any number of great draft picks they've had and continuing to spend in free agency? How, you know, what is the stumbling block? What is the thing that teams screw up too often when they reach a stage now where it's time to pay a quarterback? Is there the number one thing that you look for that teams too often mess up when it comes to quarterback contracts, or how they start surrounding that quarterback on a big contract?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say, I mean, some of the lessons learned when the guy is on a rookie deal are just simply different, right? It's just a different math problem. I think back to, like, you know, when Kansas City, you know, drafted Mahomes, and you know, when they were paying him relatively nothing as a rookie deal player, they were able to go out and get Sammy Watkins for $16 million a season, when, you know, it's fairly clear that that wasn't what he was worth. But you're able to sort of overspend at those positions. The Bengals, when, you know, it wasn't necessarily clear that Joe Burrow was going to be this, you know, amazing kind of probably second best quarterback in the NFL player. But when they had him, Chase, and Higgins on rookie deals, you know, they were able to go out and spend not a lot of money, but they were, you know, spending higher than rookie contracts on guys like Mike Hilton, Chidobe Awuzie, Von Bell, you know, Trey Hendrickson, of course, was the pass rusher, but they were able to go and build a secondary that, you know, there were a lot of things that didn't necessarily go perfectly. Trey Waynes was the highest paid guy in that secondary, and he was probably the worst investment of all of them, but ultimately it didn't matter because they were able to throw numbers at the position, and they were able to, like, spend more than maybe they necessarily had to because or needed to, because they had such a surplus at Higgins, Chase, and Burrow, and they were able to push there. And then when things went badly in the playoffs in 2021, offensive line wise, they were able to go out and spend a lot in free agency in 2022. Those lessons, you know, that solution is not a solution you can do when, you know, I think conservatively, Higgins, Chase, and Burrow are going to cost about $105 to $110 million of what could be a $240, $250 million salary cap. Like, that just simply can't happen. So you have to, you know, when you throw numbers at positions now, they have to be draft picks. They have to be, you know, buy low veterans. They have to be things like that. And so I think what's really hard is just the lessons you learn when you build the team are not necessarily the lessons that you can pull from when you're trying to maintain the team.
And that goes directly to the conversation, you know, the tough decisions. You know, we heard from Katie Blackburn back at the scouting combine, or excuse me, at the owners meetings, talking about, look, at some point there are tough decisions and everybody wants to keep these three together. And that's a great to say. But the realities of what you just talked about and what's sort of like the big discussion in Cincinnati now is, okay, everybody understands Burrow and Chase next year. Higgins becomes the thing. I mean, the funny thing is I went back and looked. You mentioned cap percentage. I just tried to go through the last 10 years or so of the highest cap percentages combined in quarterback and wide receiver rooms. And you know who that is. It's the 2015, 16, and 17 Atlanta Falcons, run by Thomas Dimitroff, who invested heavily in that room, and there's a Super Bowl in there. And so it's not like it can't be done. How possible is it in your mind to construct a roster and pay all those guys? And or are you hamstringing yourself so much that it becomes, outside of an absolute nasty run of draft picks where you just hit everything, it's just going to be hard to put enough other pieces around?
Yeah, I mean, that you know, you bring it up perfectly. Like, they had a really good run there, but then it also kind of fell apart, right? I mean, I think in many cases, you know, Arthur Blank was such a win now kind of owner that, you know, Thomas was never really able to sort of like rip the Band-Aid off once, you know, they lost, of course, that tragic Super Bowl. And even in 2017, they were probably the best team in the NFC, and they lose against Philadelphia, Nick Foles, and it, you know, what could have been. But, you know, they got buoyed a little bit by a 2016 draft that brought them Devondre Campbell and Deion Jones and a bunch of players that were helpful for them. 2015 was similarly good. But then once the well kind of ran dry on the draft picks, then and they had injuries, which, again, the Bengals, you know, have had injuries along the O-line and stuff and have been able to deal with it, but nothing of the catastrophic ilk. So once the Falcons started to have injuries to some of the weak link positions, like, they were not only not a playoff team or they were not only not a Super Bowl contender anymore, they weren't even a playoff team anymore. And so it just shows the fragility of a roster when, you know, you invest a lot of the money into a couple positions. And even if those positions, in my opinion, are, you know, two of the most valuable that you can invest in, it just makes roster building really hard. One thing I do like about what the Bengals are doing, though, and I said this on Twitter during the draft, it's sort of annoying how good they are at this. But they do draft a few years ahead, and they draft at premium positions that are hard to attain in free agency. You know, they go out and, you know, they have, you know, Osai and Hendrickson and Hubbard, and they go get Miles Murphy because one day Hendrickson's going to be too expensive and Hubbard's going to be too expensive. And you're not going to be able to go into free agency and access those players the same way you were when Burrow was on a rookie deal. You know, 2 years ago it was Cam Taylor-Britt and Dax Hill when it was too expensive to keep Jesse Bates long term. And so I think that there are things that you can do that, you know, if you draft, you know, needs 2 years and ahead, you can sort of curb some of these issues, but they're difficult. And that's why, I mean, it's not that, you know, Thomas did, you know, silly things or he was, or anybody, Minnesota, teams like that, that have had a hard time sustaining success, even though they've had good play at wide receiver and quarterback. It's more that it's just the gravity of the league and the things that you have to go through in order to maintain success. It's really hard. I mean, the Chiefs took a lot of flack for trading Tyreek Hill last year, and ultimately it ended up being the right decision, but it was not a difficult decision for them to make.
Yeah. And that's what's the number? I mean, there's a two things. I remember there was a fantastic podcast you guys did on that topic back a little bit before the draft and really dove into the, and it's a great conversation. I ask people to go listen to it, but you explained the mechanics of the Mahomes contract and what made that so team friendly. And years is kind of a number that you always watch when these quarterback contracts come out, is the longer the years, the more team friendly, so to speak, typically, and the shorter the years, the more player friendly. It seems like what is the number you look at most when a quarterback contract is released, as far as, you know, what it means and the fallout from it? And can you in that kind of discuss the mechanics of the Mahomes contract and why it's been such a dream for the Chiefs?
Yeah, for sure. Because, like, you know, you look at a deal like the Kirk Cousins contract, which I think a lot of teams are like, well, it's so short that, you know, while it's expensive and guaranteed, if it doesn't work, we can get out from under it. And it's like, sure, but what happens if he plays to the level of the contract and no better? Because when you're a quarterback, I mean, it's not enough to play to the level of your contract, right? You're the CEO, you're management. You have to play above and beyond, or you have to elevate the players around you. And so, like, I almost think of it like with Dak Prescott too, and you know, Kyler Murray now, and it, you know, these deals where it's like, well, what if he plays to the value of the contract and no better? You're not going to win, you know? And so that's really tough. I look at the longer term deals as being better. Now the player's never going to like that. You know, when you look at Derek Carr and you look at Jimmy Garoppolo, their deals were very team friendly because by the time you got to year 4 and 5, the cap had risen enough, even with the pandemic, that their number relative to the cap was really inexpensive. And that's sort of what you lose when the deal is short, because if you run a guy on a 3-year deal, basically after 2 years, he's going to come back to the table and get a contract that's right back up to the market rate again. So you never get the smoothing properties of the cap going up while your quarterback contract stays fixed, essentially. And so, you know, what the Chiefs did with Mahomes was so brilliant, because it gave Mahomes effectively the fully guaranteed kind of nature that Deshaun Watson got and Kirk Cousins got. But from a cap standpoint, it gave the Chiefs the flexibility to be able to spread the money out when necessary and to take the hits when necessary. So they did a thing called rolling guarantees, which essentially a roster bonus was, you know, it is on the books every year for his deal that becomes fully guaranteed 2 years beforehand. So essentially, every part of the deal is fully guaranteed for every 3-year window of the 12-year deal. So it's like effectively 4 3-year fully guaranteed deals. And what the Chiefs can do with a roster bonus is essentially, like last year, they paid it out in full, all $27 million, because they had the cap space to do it. And essentially, Mahomes, you know, whether or not he's going to get the $27 million basically on the spot no matter what, it just depends upon how you account for it in the cap. So they could have split it by 5 ways and prorated it into the future, or they could just pay it all at once. And it really, they can choose to do that depending upon the state of their roster. So this year they took about a third of his roster bonus and converted it, you know, spread it out so they could get Donovan Smith and, you know, players like that. And some years they had to allocate the whole thing when their tackles got injured in the Super Bowl and they had to trade for Orlando Brown and sign Joe Tooney. They converted the entire thing. And so to the player, it makes no difference because you're just getting a signing bonus every single time. But to the team, Obviously, it matters a lot because you can convert those numbers and work the cap the way that you want to. It gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. Is there another number when a quarterback contract comes out that you immediately gravitate to that tells you the most, that people should look at whenever Burrow signs his NFL record deal, whenever this happens, that people should, number one, be looking at?
Yeah, I think it's probably the ratio of the 3-year cap hit to the full cap hit. So, you know, if the Bengals, you know, because you want that number to be high. Like, I think about, like, now Burrow is a much better player, but I remember when, you know, the Niners signed Jimmy Garoppolo, they front loaded that deal a lot. And part of the reason was Garoppolo came in 2017 and, you know, he went 5-0 as a starter with a roster that wasn't particularly good. And it got everybody's hopes up. And I think internally in San Francisco, they didn't feel like 2018 was going to be, you know, the everything everywhere all at once for them, you know. So they decided, okay, we're going to give Garoppolo this big deal. We're going to front load a lot of the cap hits and the cash right away. And then, you know, he's going to get his money. And then once we become good, you know, and we get the draft picks. Now, they got kind of lucky that he got hurt so they could get the second pick and get Nick Bosa and all that kind of stuff. But, like, essentially, by the time, you know, it got to 19, 20, 21, Garoppolo has paid hardly anything relative to the cap. You know, some teams do it the other way. Some teams, you know, like the Eagles, they don't have the luxury because they've done so much leveraging. If you look at their over-the-cap page, all of their great players have basically minimum salaries in the paragraph five because everything is so prorated. So, like, Jalen Hurts isn't making hardly anything relative to the cap early in that contract. So I think what you want to look at is cap hits in the first 3 years relative to cap hits in the whole deal. And if that ratio is like smaller than one, then you just know that there's going to be less flexibility for you in the future. If it's greater than one, then you know that that's a deal where maybe you're going to have to restructure it later because the guy is going to want more money up front in future years. But at least you're going to have more flexibility after that initial jolt of investment by the owners and by the team.
Yeah, Bengals have been the king of front load cash early and take in exchange for flexibility later. It's been kind of the way they've operated with almost everything. I would, you know, say this. I mean, you mentioned you know the Chiefs obviously inside and out on top of everything else as much as anything. Orlando Brown moves over from the Chiefs to the Bengals. What did you make of that move? What did you think of him as a player and B as a contract that ended up where, you know, he ends up paid? I think he's now the 11th highest paid left tackle and 18th overall tackle in the league. What did you make of that move and that deal?
I think with respect to Kansas City, like, the issue was always that, you know, their left tackle just had to be good enough. It had to be above a certain threshold because, you know, they had Eric Fisher there who was, you know, a top pick in the draft in 2013, but was not a superstar the way that Mitchell Schwartz on the other side was. But Mahomes was able to work around it. You know, he came from Baltimore where, you know, it's a very easy position to pass block for. You know, with Lamar Jackson, you know, the tracking data shows that, you know, defensive ends and everything, they come off the ball slower. So, you know, I think Brown was able to steady the Chiefs offensive line, even if he wasn't spectacular. And in my opinion, last summer, you know, he probably could have gotten a better deal from the Chiefs if he were more able to see where the market was on him. Instead, he kind of wanted a deal that was put him on, you know, the same level as Trent Williams. And so, like, that didn't work. So now the Bengals, in my opinion, get a very good deal for him. I mean, you know, left tackle, you know, tackles in general in the free agents market are like starting pitching, right? If you want to get a real veteran starting pitcher in Major League Baseball, you're going to have to pay $15 to $20 million most of the time. And I think that the same thing's true with tackle. And, you know, the Bengals are paying a little bit of money to get some certainty there. And I think the certainty with Orlando Brown is that you're going to get good play. You're not going to get great play. And you're going to have some games where he's overmatched by the athlete in front of him. And you're going to have to, you know, that's a worry. The AFC is nice in that a lot of the premier pass rushers rush from the offense's right side. So it's not as bad you know, as he maybe been historically. But he's a player that I think will help the Bengals. But there are going to be games where he's frustrating, and there were games that he was frustrating in Kansas City, namely the game before the Bengals game in the playoffs, where you know, he surrendered pressure that got Mahomes injured, and that, you know, that he, no left tackle is perfect, but you know, he has his moments, and but if you average it out over a whole season, he's pretty good.
I'll let you get going with this one more thing. I mean, you guys do. I mean, you've been doing so much work and research and understanding the true levers of how the NFL works and how teams fail, not realizing that they're failing. What is one thing through all the work you guys have done that you see teams make the same mistake over and over again? Or are you seeing now teams getting so much smarter in the regard of knowing the pitfalls that come in roster building, as far as, you know, not knowing the big mistakes that teams can make when it comes to how to allocate resources and best get the most value out of their rosters?
Yeah, I think they're getting better. I mean, and this is a different anecdote because it's on-field play, but I think it's instructive. Like 2016, there were no teams in the NFL that went for fourth down more than 50% of the time that they should have. And in 2022, the last time I looked, it was like more than 50% of the teams. So you are seeing this an evolution. Now, you're still going to see head scratching. You know, like I think about the Chiefs playing the Bengals in December and Andy Reid kicking that field goal with Butker in the cold. And you know, that was a blunder. But you still, but like teams are getting better. The roster building stuff is moving in the right direction. Like you look at kind of, you know, salaries of certain positions. You look at, you know, just like the trends, wide receiver, who I think is incredibly valuable. We've seen that kind of get into the salaries, and that, you know, where the teams put their dollars and their capital is really a good indication of what they value. I don't think it's all the way there. And I think like the biggest mistake that NFL teams make is trusting their own evaluations too much. And what I mean is a ton of empirical research that suggests that if you just take the do better than saying, like, I know that this linebacker is amazing in our scheme, and so I'm going to take him around early. Like, almost always that's, you know, empirically that's generally speaking going to fail. And so I think teams on average are doing better, but there's always these head scratchers, which, like, for Bengals fans, they don't make those mistakes. Like you know, just in the same with like Miles Murphy, like, you know, they could have think about a running back there or something like that. And it's like, you know, they actually did a very sound thing. They probably took the best player on board on at a very premium position, despite the fact it wasn't a need, or it might not have even been a scheme fit. I'm not an expert there, but they just do that. And then they know that over time, like that generally speaking is going, you know, going to win games. And it's not sexy, and it doesn't like get written about, you know, in the various publications, but it's the right thing to do.
Thank you so much for your time, Eric. It's been awesome catching up with you. And I make sure everybody puts into their feed the Sumer Sports podcast, Eric and Thomas. Awesome stuff on not just the world of analytics, but the world of football and how things operate from the top down. It's fun stuff. It's interesting stuff all times of year. So, Eric, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. It's been great having you as a fellow Cincinnati resident. And best of luck to you with the new office opening down there in Atlanta. And we will catch up with you in the future, though.
All right, thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, great to hear from Eric Eager, and we will switch from him over to our good friend and yours from ESPN 1530, Mo Egger. What is going on?
How are we doing, guys? What's going on?
Doing great. Great to have you back. We got Jay back. We got the band back together. Mm-hmm. Last week, there was a lot of reaction to our lawn mowing talk last week.
I noticed, yeah.
People were, I think we really tapped into a portion of Cincinnati that really exists and cares about lawn mowing. Maybe it's as sentimental as it is for you and I.
It made me feel bad for people who don't cut their own lawn.
Yeah.
I felt for those aristocrats who pay somebody else to show up at their house with a tractor.
I cut three lawns. I cut my yard, I cut my mom's, and then I have a friend that passed away in January, and I cut the widow's yard. So
wow,
I really do enjoy. And I wanted to ask you, because I enter every free contest I can find on the internet. Yeah. Uh-huh. Am I eligible to win Mow Your Own Lawn?
You're not an immediate family member, I don't think. And you're not an iHeartMedia employee. You don't work for Baxla Tractor. You don't work for Riverbend. So I think you're good. Today's the last day to sign up. So
Wouldn't it look fishy though if I won? Like if you guys pulled my name, would you be like, "Oh, we can't take him"?
So I've had friends of mine enter, and I'm not going to lie. I've silently rooted for them. This year, I think my next door neighbor entered. Which, given the fact that I have to take the lawnmower to the winner's house, would be terrific.
Yeah.
I don't really want to drive the ESPN 1530 van through my neighborhood, I'll be honest with you. And so I'm not sure if I'm rooting for them. But, I mean, you know, look, it's a free contest. I don't pick the winner. It's a guy named Rodney does it. So, you know, if there was any impropriety, he'd have to answer to.
All right.
I mean, it's really, actually, I feel really sad that you, Jay, weren't a part of our lawn mowing conversation in full last week, and seeing as how much you mow the lawn. And you've told me before, you're a shirt off guy, aren't you?
Used to be. I have more respect for my neighbors now. I just go sleeveless, try to avoid the farmer tan.
Have you ever been a shirt off mow guy?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, sweet God, no. Nobody wants to see that. In life, you have to know your limitations. And me being shirtless is one of them.
It happens. It happens now. It's out there.
No. As a boy, and I don't do this anymore, I was like the kid who had a t-shirt on in the pool. Yeah. And it wasn't because I was self-conscious, although I was. It was I wanted to be courteous to everybody else. I just assume nobody wanted to see that, and I maintain that to this day.
I'm a t-shirt in the ocean on vacation guy, because that's just strictly of a sun, like, cancerous, like, concern issue, because I've had issues on my shoulders. So I'll wear the t-shirt out in the ocean. I don't care, man. I don't mind it at all. I mean, I end up with the what I call the employment line, which is the tan that you get on the old farmer's tan.
Yeah.
So I have that, but I don't care, you know, better than being sunburned.
Yeah. If you don't take your shirt off, nobody knows you have that
line. That's true. Always. You really should always just wear a shirt. Like, honestly, like, there's just very few situations where you should ever feel like you're in the wrong for wearing a shirt. We should get right from that to headbands, because let's get to the important topics. We talked a little bit about headbands yesterday. No, I won't go any more into headbands. We established, Jay, you've never worn a headband. You established sunglasses and the mullet is as close as you've gotten to headband.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. I won't get into the disrespect for Michelle Williams of Destiny's Child.
It wasn't disrespect. It was acknowledging her place in the pecking order. Look, if Michelle Williams, what we were doing is, I said, if I was Logan Wilson, try to paraphrase this, because you brought up the idea of maybe right before a camp, they have a big deal where they announce Burrow, Higgins, and Wilson get their new contracts. And I said, if I was Logan Wilson, I would want my own day, because you guys aren't going to want to talk to Logan Wilson. It's Burrow. It's Higgins. Logan Wilson at that point is the throw-in. Now, if he has his own day, terrific. And I said, it'd be like if Destiny's Child reunited, which I'd be here for. Everybody would want to talk to Beyonce. Everybody would want to talk to Kelly. I'm not sure Michelle would garner a lot of attention. And so if I was Michelle, I'd sort of feel like, although, you know what, she'd be collecting probably an 8-figure check, so everything would be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, there just wouldn't be as much attention paid to her. Now, if she was out on her own, everybody would want to talk to her. She's still a member of Destiny's Child, or at least she was. And I'm sure she's enjoying a fabulous career, whatever she's doing. But it just, that's how it works. So if I was Logan Wilson, I would want the Beyonce treatment. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. She's a $10 million net worth. Okay. She's been on Broadway.
Right.
She's done television and movies.
Fantastic. She's had a very successful career.
She's always there at the drop of a hat anytime Beyonce needs her. It's important.
The reality is this. If we asked most of your listeners/viewers, name the three. I know there was a fourth for a while. I don't know what happened there. But name the members of Destiny's Child. 100% are going to say Beyonce. Maybe 70% are going to say Kelly Rowland. How many are going
to
say?
I did have to Google Michelle Williams just to make this joke.
Exactly.
So I kind of out myself on that.
And if you ask people around the country, if like how the Bengals signed three guys, Burrow, Higgins, and the linebacker, that's how it's going to work. And I don't want that for Logan. I want him to have his own day.
That's fair.
I think Logan, knowing his personality, would be very happy with that. Just kind of be the Michelle Williams overlooked and not have to say too much.
The same way that I thought that Geno Atkins asked for his to be released the same time as Carlos Dunlap so that they could both do that press conference together was the sole reason he cared about when they came in. We have so our colleague Vic Taffer does some picks in a weekly column and over unders and things like that. So that would be a good spot for us to dive into an AFC North conversation with you, Mo. It's over under wins in the AFC North.
Mm-hmm.
But Jay, how are we going to set this up now?
So you're gonna pick Ravens, Bengals, Steelers, Browns, whether you think they go over or under their win total, but you're going to power rank them by your confidence in that pick.
Oh.
So the Bengals are at 11.5. The Ravens are 9.5. The Browns are 9.5. And the Steelers are 8.5. So go ahead and pick what you think each team is going to go over or under, and then which one you're most confident in happening, and work your way down the list.
I can give you time to think about it since we just dropped a lot on you here.
Yes.
And I'll start it off. Okay,
get out a
mine.
Notepad.
Yeah, I know. It's a good thing you brought the notepad and the pen today. I'll start here. I'm going to say, again, people are – I hate to like have breaking news here, but like Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season.
What?
And you're going to have the Steelers at 8.5. I think they're – much better. I just like everything the Steelers have done. I think you're going to get some jump from Kenny Pickett in year two. I don't know how much, but I do think their line will be better. I think their weapons are better. Their defense, they really came on at the end of last season. I think there's real momentum there. Them at 8.5, I'm probably most confident that they will go over 8.5. So I would make that, and that's and predicting any team to win 12 games is just a lot. It's just a big number to expect of anyone. And so I think the Bengals, I predicted them even in our schedule thing for them to go over. I am most confident. I think I would go Steelers number one. I would go Bengals over the 11.5 would be my number two ranking. My number three would be Browns under the 9.5. I'm just not buying it till I see it. I don't need to see another offseason championship banner hung in Cleveland. It just happens over and over again. And I'll say Ravens over 9.5. I think they're good, but that's my least confident in it.
I went the same way with I had over on the same three you did and Browns under. I had Browns under as my number two pick. For the reason you said, just 11.5 is a big number. Even though if I was making a prediction right now, I'd be right where you were at 12.5. But Steelers over 8.5 feels like a lock.
Yeah, we're pretty close. I think Pittsburgh's the second best team in the division. They've got to go 9-8 to hit the over. I think that's very doable. Paul, we've talked about a bunch about how good their offseason has been. And, the Tomlins never had a losing record deal. So they played great at the end of the year. They won 6 out of 7. They're formidable every single week. They beat the Bengals last season. You could talk about the fluky nature of it, but they did for a Bengals team that ended up being really, really good and won 12-4. So, and this is a better Pittsburgh team than the one that came to Paycor last year and beat them. So, and they were pretty tough out in the game at whatever they call that stadium now in Pittsburgh. So I'll go Pittsburgh over 8.5. We're in like risky territory when we're going over 11.5 wins with the Bengals. And so, this is one of those instances when the schedule comes out and it really sort of crystallizes what they have in front of them. So prior to the schedule coming out, I would have gone under. But then on schedule release night, we had a schedule release show, and Lance McAllister and Tony Pike and I kind of did a consensus, and we had them going 11-4. We didn't agree on every game they're going to win or lose, but we had them go, I'm sorry, we had them going 13-4. 13-4, which, look, they won 12 games last season, and they did it during a 16-game schedule because of the Buffalo Bills situation. So I've got to have the same number of wins as last year. I think offensively this team is going to be better than last year. So I have them going over 11.5 because I've got them going 13-4. But I don't know how you could be more confident in them winning more than 11.5 games than you can be in Pittsburgh winning more than 8.5. It's basic math. So I'll go that number two. I'll go Cleveland under 9.5, although I think they're less likely. If I did an exercise on our show last week where I put a poll question to everybody and I said, who's the team most likely to finish in last place in the AFC North? And everybody said Cleveland, and maybe that happens. I got a bad feeling, a good feeling from a Bengals fan perspective, I guess, but a bad feeling about Baltimore this year. Still, for Cleveland to hit the over, they have to improve by 3 wins in a division that is really, really difficult. And yes, I think Deshaun Watson is going to play at a pretty high level this season. But yeah, there's history here. There have been a lot of off seasons that they have won, and it hasn't translated to success. And by the way, they could have a winning record and improve upon what they did last year and finish 9-8, and they still don't hit the over. Mm-hmm. So I'll go under there. And then Baltimore, not a ton of confidence. I'm really skeptical that offensively they're going to take a major step forward. Lamar Jackson, from a health perspective, is unreliable. And yeah, John Harbaugh's a Hall of Fame coach. Defensively, they're still formidable. I need to see it offensively before I believe it. So I'll go under. And by under doesn't mean they go 3-14. Under might mean right. They go 9-8. And so I'm going to go under, but I'll put that at number four.
I find it really interesting. Is this the toughest division in football this year? I mean, we can talk about, you know, the AFC East. I mean, I don't know how many NFC divisions we're going to talk about in that conversation. You're probably talking all AFC. I mean, the AFC East now with Rodgers, the expectations for the Jets, the Bills, you know, will still be good. Belichick and Miami, I mean, when Tua was healthy last year, was as good as almost anybody for the most part. The Chiefs, I mean, the Chiefs and the Chargers, we know about Sean Payton. I don't know, man. Like, we know it's not the South. I have a hard time seeing anybody having more of a grind getting through their division than what you have trying to get out of the AFC North this year.
Without really thinking too much about it, so you have 4 teams that I think right now feel pretty good about who their quarterback is. You know, the Browns deep down inside might not be in love with the guaranteed money to Deshaun Watson, but I think they feel like they've got their guy. I think they probably feel like they have their guy in Pittsburgh. Baltimore just paid their guy, and the Bengals, newsflash, have their guy. In how many divisions could you say that about all 4 teams? In how many divisions have 3 coaches who have coached in Super Bowls? How many divisions have 4 coaches who have won playoff games? So, I mean, I think that's what most of us do, right? We start with quarterback and coach. From that standpoint, which division's better in terms of what's been accomplished, what's in place? By the way, none of those quarterbacks are old. They're all either in or just entering their primes. I know Deshaun Watson might still be playing some rust off, but yeah, I mean, look, last year's last place finisher, which didn't have its ideal starting quarterback for 11 games, won 7 games.
Yeah.
Nobody in this division drafted in the top 5 last year. And I'm not sure anybody is definitively worse from a roster perspective. So that might be a very overly sort of simplistic way of looking at it. But again, and maybe it's out there and I'm not thinking about it, and I really haven't sort of fleshed out this exercise as much as maybe I should. But I would challenge somebody to find a division that you could say is better and deeper and where no team got worse, or that has the depth in quarterback and coaching that this one has.
and fewer questions. I mean, yeah, you can say the AFC East, but is Tua going to be able to stay healthy? Is Rodgers as good as he is? Is he going to be a fit with the Jets, or are they actually going to put it together? And then the same with the West. I mean, I could easily see the West being the AFC West being the best division at the end of the year. But if you're sitting here now predicting it, it has to be the AFC North. You don't know. The Raiders could be formidable, but you mm-hmm. can't bank on that right now.
They would stink.
And then who knows with, I mean, you got to go with track records and believe in Sean Payton and Russell Wilson, but that there's just an unknown dynamic there. So I'm with you guys. It has to be the AFC North sitting here right now today.
And that's, you know, when you start talking about win totals, I mean, to me, that's like when you talk about 11.5 feeling like a big number. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to get through 6 games against these dudes.
Yeah.
And in a year, you know I've talked about it a lot. Like, I want to get the one seed. And so to me, that's why I loved Rodgers going to the Jets, because even if you still believe Buffalo is the favorite, and they are, well, maybe they're a little bit less likely to finish with more wins than everybody else because the Jets are better. Maybe the Dolphins are going to be, you know, still a tough out. I think the Patriots are going to stink, but whatever. But in this division, can you get the one? Now, you know, we thought the AFC West last year was going to be the greatest division of all time. It turned out not to be. And the Chiefs got the one. But I make such a big deal about that because I don't want the Bengals to have to go to Arrowhead Stadium or Buffalo, and I want them to play one less playoff game. If you could accomplish that and have the division be as good as we think, that's going to be pretty remarkable.
Yeah. I just, you know, it's going to be an absolute slog, but that's what it is. Like it goes back to the 2021 season and that famous Joe Burrow on the sideline line. If you can win this division, mm-hmm. you can win the whole thing. And that's going to be the realization for whoever wins the North this year. I will say that I think whoever wins the North, I would be very comfortable putting them in the AFC championship.
Hey, did you know that nobody has ever won the AFC North 3 straight years?
You know what? I said that on your boy Tony Pike and Austin Elmore's show, and they were stunned.
Really?
They said,
where have they been? What have they been doing?
I hope that they were being sarcastic. Like, but they sounded, maybe they just really did sarcasm better than anyone I've ever seen, or the joke was on me.
Yeah.
But they sounded really stunned. And so I'm gonna hope that it was hard sarcasm, but they seemed really surprised. We'll have to ask them today when you see them if they
because for about 3 minutes that was like the thing that you could say to people to impress them.
Yeah,
like, oh, really? Yeah, you can't do that anymore. It's been beaten into the ground, and it's only May. So
so they were probably making fun of me, huh?
There's also the fact that the AFC North is only 20 years old.
It wouldn't. There's still, that too. Yes.
Still. Yeah. All right, Mo, I won't take any more of your time. I appreciate it. If people want to hear us talk about Destiny's Child and other many topics, that podcast from yesterday, ESPN 1530, is up on iHeart. So
who should be more flattered? Logan Wilson, that I compared him to Michelle Williams, or Michelle Williams, that I compared her to Logan Wilson?
Well, Michelle Williams can't be flattered that you didn't know her name until we had to Google it.
Nobody knows her. And you know what? That's okay. That's all right. It's like being the other guy in Wham. Guess what? That guy's still cashing checks for Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Right?
Andrew something.
Yeah, nobody knows who he is. I'm totally fine being an anonymous rich person.
Look, last week we dated ourselves with old dad lawn talk, and now here we are bringing up Wham in the middle of the podcast.
I don't know why Wham was the go-to reference, but yeah.
That's fine. It's all
Andrew,
right.
His name is Andrew Ridgely, actually. I do Ridgely, know this. Okay.
On that note, yes. We'll say goodbye.
See you guys.
Thanks, Mo.
Andrew Ridgely dropped today. How about that? Very exciting. All right, Jay, let's go. We celebrated 513 Day this weekend.
We did.
That was very exciting. I love 513 Day. Did my stop at Skyline with my daughters. It feels mandatory when you're celebrating such a Cincinnati holiday. But you have a Cincinnati 513 Day run passer boot. And what's more 513 Day than run passer boot in and of itself?
Exactly.
Based off the theme song, part of this podcast that is really, let's be honest, a fabric of the community.
Yes, it is.
So run passer boot, 5-1-3 day. As this is as Cincinnati as it gets. What do you got?
What happens first? Joe Burrow signs his contract. Joey Votto plays his first game for the Reds this year, or the WEBN fireworks.
Whoo. That's a good one. I feel like you spent your vacation coming up with this. or like a drive or a flight trying to think of it, cuz this is a good one.
I do have a question, like, cuz you know with the injured list or DL, whatever it is in MLB, it can be retroactive when it's the regular 10-day one, but when they put Votto on the 60-day DL,
that is also retroactive.
It is retroactive. Yeah. So I don't know when his first
end
eligible
of May, I believe, is the when he'd be eligible. Okay. You know, he's down in Louisville doing stuff. Like, he took a lot of BP. He's down. Well, I mean, he's actually back taking. I feel like he's getting closer. Hmm. Now, the discussion with Burrow yesterday is, I don't know. It still feels to, it's hard to pinpoint a date. Again, they're being quiet. Everyone's being quiet. It's all quiet. Quiet things being quiet. So to put a date on it is hard. Although I would say I believe that it's going to be before camp starts. That does feel like a thing for me, that it would be before camp starts. Now, the fireworks are what, September? What's the date
third.
This year?
September 3rd.
This year. So I'm definitely thinking it's before that. So I'm going to boot. I'm gonna go ahead and boot the fireworks. I'm going to run with Joey Votto. And I'm going to pass on the Burrow contract. So I think Votto will happen first. I think it'll go Votto, Burrow, fireworks.
Yeah, I'm with you. Since it's since the 60-day is retroactive, I didn't think he was going to be eligible to come back this soon. Maybe I should have gone July 4th fireworks instead of EBN fireworks, but that's not as Cincinnati. I've looked at the past extensions that the Bengals have signed. The ones that have happened before Mock Turtle Soup Day or after. And actually, Sam Hubbard's in 2021 was a day after Mock Turtle Soup Day. Tyler Boyd's in 2019 was on Mock Turtle Soup Day.
I remember that.
And in 2013, Carlos Dunlap's was 1 week before Mock Turtle Soup Day. The only other one that kind of fits in this range where it could be soon is Gio. Did his in 2016 in June, the week before minicamp. Everybody else has been in camp or right at the start of camp around Mock Turtle Soup Day. So it does feel like, and with what you said earlier, with him kind of waiting out Herbert, it just feels like this is not going to happen this summer. It could, but it feels, if you go with history timelines and then knowing what the Herbert situation is, we're probably talking about late July, early August at the soonest.
But if there's anything we've learned about life after Joe Burrow, is you can throw history and timelines out the window, because it's a totally new era and things happen very differently around here. And we've just never seen a contract like this before here, outside of the Carson Palmer instantly after the season in 2005. I mean, it's just a unique one-off where you're going to see unique things in the contract that the Bengals don't do. You're just, it's so, to predict something that is really without precedent here in a lot of ways is hard to do. So, you know, we can sit here and say all we want. I do generally just feel like Burrow's going to want to get into camp and have it behind him. Mm-hmm. And the team would like to have it behind them. That doesn't mean it will get done then, but I do kind of feel that way, but we'll see. We'll look back on that one. I mean, AJ Green was like the day before the opener in 15. They were flying to Oakland.
Brakes on a plane.
I mean, brakes on a plane. Jim O. Thankfully got the Wi-Fi on his Delta flight and had to do brakes on a plane from up there, which is incredible. We'll see. Good run passer boot though there, Jay. I like that a lot. Arby's. You're on vacation. You had all kinds of stories happening to you. Do you got any good Arby's?
Not really Bengals related. I do want to thank, at the Reds Marlins game on Friday, I was walking through the concourse and someone said, "Hey, are you Jay Morrison?" He was wearing a red shirt. I was wearing a red shirt, and he was talking about, he was a huge fan of the podcast And he was surprised to see me at the Reds game because he said on Hear That Podcast Growling, Paul said I would probably be in South Florida somewhere getting my face melted off by Pantera. And I did not. I did not go to any concerts while I was down there, but we did hit the Reds game. I guess the one unique thing that I had happen yesterday is while I was kind of waiting around for Jamar and T to come in the locker room and you guys were all in the press conference with Burroughs, I walked into the auxiliary press or locker room where all the rookies and undrafted guys are. And you walk in there and everybody stops and just looks at you like, who are you? Like those guys don't know who I am yet. And I was just looking to see who was in there. I didn't know that I was looking for Charlie Jones and I didn't realize that they had put his locker out in the main part of the locker room. And I almost felt like I needed to introduce myself to the group, but instead I just kind of turned around and left and walked out. I figured I'd talk to those guys in time.
So that's good. I have a little bit of a take on that because on Friday at the rookie mini camp, they came off their nine holes that they played out there. and Zach Taylor was speaking to the media. This was over in the indoor facility. And I said to Kyle with media relations, like, so is the locker room open? These guys are all getting on the bus to go back. Like, once he talks, can I just go? I'm not listening to what Zach's saying. To try to get some FaceTime with the rookies before the rest of the media came in. He's like, yeah, it'll be open. You can go. And so we did. So we went. Once I heard one question about the value of stretching, I dipped out. I was like, I think that's enough. And it's not a any slight on the question. It was just I just decided, okay, we've gone through the cycle here of all the important questions. And so I dipped off and went in there. So I was really, it was myself, Elise Jesse from SI, formerly WLWT, and Joe Daneman, because Joe, I'll be on the podcast last week, was actually walking over. He was getting ready to show up when the locker was trying to go over to the facility. And I said, well, if you want to go into the locker room right now, we're just going in before anybody else. So we went in there. So it was just the three of us. And it was, I mean, this was rookie. This was freshman orientation. Like these guys are figuring out where their lockers are at or whatever. They're all like kind of getting settled in. And so I went back to the QC, to the quarantine club. It used to be the quarantine club. Now it's all the practice squad and rookies are just like you. Walked in, everyone's sitting in there. They all look right up at me. And I was going to just, my plan was to go in and say hello to Chase Brown. But everyone's looking right at me. So I said, well, I guess I should just make an announcement. I was like, I'm Paul. I work for The Athletic. I'm really excited to meet all you guys. You guys are in a great spot. Our media, we do our best to work with you. It's a really great group. Really excited to have you all. Congratulations. I'm going to try to get around and say hi to you guys all individually as we go. But I did. I made the announcement.
Oh, yeah.
of the spiel that I would have given to any of them individually. But then it was weird because then I was like, I did come in here to talk to the highest ranking amongst you, which is the fifth round running back. So I did go over to Chase and talk to him for a little bit, just catching up with him and telling him how much I loved his story about him and Sydney that TSN did on him and whatever. But it was a great opportunity to just kind of cycle through the locker room and get to know those guys and just not show up where the first meeting is me with a microphone in their face and just kind of get to know them a little bit and a good group. And it was funny. I tweeted this afterwards. It was amazing how many of them had a true, genuine thankfulness for where they landed, and feeling so happy to be here. And now they obviously would say that, and they certainly wouldn't tell a reporter like, "God, I wish I would have gone to the Eagles." Right? Like, no, obviously it's not going to go that way, but it wasn't like fake thing that they were just saying. It was like, man, I just was so lucky. I'm just so happy to have ended up here. Like, because they're the way they, you know, just everything about the organization, the patience it has, how they're going to take them along slowly. I mean, there's not this immediate pressure to show up and be this thing, and you can develop and just, I think a lot of them felt really valued in being here. That did stand out to me throughout those conversations. So it was, but it was a very similar type of thing. And for those of you that read the story about the background on the scouts and the play and the rookies and noted the picture with T DJ Turner and Miles Murphy together when they were kids. They both did say that, it was a mom and a dad had been childhood friends. And so they had always hung out in the same area. They already have been in conversations to be on the same flights and make sure they're coming to the same games and get their tickets together. And so it's all worked out perfectly for them for DJ and Miles and their families to be attending games together.
I went up to Miles because when he came in with his dad, I was talking to his dad for a while, and his dad's been a Falcons season ticket holder for years and big Falcons fan. And I said, the preseason games, they try to make them geographically convenient for the teams for shorter travel. And the Bengals haven't played the Falcons in the preseason for a long time. So I was like, you might get to see your son make his NFL debut in a preseason game against the Falcons in the building that you've been going to for years. He was talking about how exciting that would be and how much he would love that. And so when the schedule comes out, they do their first road game, their week two preseason game is against the Falcons. So I went up to Miles yesterday and asked him how fired up his dad was. He had no idea what I was talking about. He didn't even know they were playing the Falcons. He's like, I looked at the regular season schedule. I had no idea. But he's like, that is pretty cool. And he was talking about how he was 11, the first game he ever went to in Atlanta to see the Falcons play. And, that will be, his dad said he's going to keep his Falcons tickets, but he'll be giving them away. And Miles said he's already purchased Bengals season tickets.
Feels like an athletic feature to me if I've ever heard one, Jay.
Yeah, sit with his dad in the stands for the Atlanta game.
Lastly, the last one that I had is a shout out to our guy Rudy, otherwise known as Acid Guy, from back in the day. When we did I believe it was from the Rewatchables, where he claimed that he was watching a game while like on acid through someone's window. It was very creepy. But We've discussed him often. I said, I want to get him on and just tell his stories. We look for a lot of weird stuff in the off season time. Yeah. Let's say, you know what? Maybe we just have Rudy come on and just tell all his best stories. Well, it was at Little Miami Brewing Company, having a couple of Strange Brew beers, which is Ken Brew's beer out there, which was delicious. It was cream ale. I really liked it. I was out there with some friends. And towards the end of it, Rudy just comes over, drops down a pitcher and says, thanks for all the draft coverage. It's me, Acid Guy. And if you ever really want to do, I said, hey, look, I'm serious. We do want to try it. It's on the mind. It's on the mind. When we start getting into some dead zones, looking for some podcasts, it's on the mind. So shout out, thanks to Rudy for stopping by, for dropping some beer on me and my friends, and saying hello. I always appreciate it. I mean, a huge appreciation for somebody who did that. It was awesome.
Maybe he and I can swap acid stories.
Hey, look, you know, we do the 2-on-2 session, right? The 2-on-2 is just you and Rudy swapping acid stories. I mean, look, we've already got some other good ideas for 2-on-2 that I'm excited about that we got to get executed. But if we have a hole in the schedule and we wanted to do 5 and we only got 4 that we could pull off, I think we know what the 5th one should be. How perfect would it be?
It would be great.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening. And we will be checking back with you here, of course, next week. More good stuff. We're on Wednesdays right now through this portion of phase 2 of the schedule, because the Bengals are doing their Tuesday availabilities and locker rooms and practices. So we want to give ourselves plenty of time to get things in order, get some stories out for you guys and react to that. So be looking for us on Wednesdays here until they officially wrap up everything after mandatory minicamp, which is in mid-June. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.